Come forth now this man, your prophet. Through him, mighty Moloch, implant your seeds in the body of your unholy bride. Nurture those seeds within her to produce your demon child. Infuse him with your strength. Let your seeds of hell grow deep within her.
I can't believe I'm seeing this.
Everything is ready, my darling. Do not be afraid. Soon we'll be together again.
This sandwich tastes as dry as hell.
L-I-P-O-P spells lollipop.
Why don't you just go hand out parking tickets and leave me alone? Stick to something you know about.
Listen, my daughter was about your age. Then she met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You should believe in ghosts, P-Brain.
He's a closet!
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer!
Hello and welcome to Hello, This is the Doom Show. I am Richard of the Mountains. I am here with the woodsy Jeffrey of the Woods. Hello, Jeffrey.
I would prefer if you refer to me as Bigfoot throughout the rest of this program.
Okay, I got a question.
Yeah.
Do you have big feet?
No, they're actually fairly small.
Oh, okay.
I'm like a 10 and a half, 11.
Oh, see, that's a nice size, but you can actually find shoes in a store.
Yes.
Whereas I would just have to order everything online because I'm a 13 currently.
Jesus.
When I was 300 pounds, you know, like when I met you, after I stopped eating humans whole, I was actually a size bigger. I was a size 14.
How? How does that make your feet longer?
Your body tries to compensate by holding you upright. Like your bodies get scared of falling over, so your feet get bigger.
Whoa. This is news to me.
Just make plaster casts of your feet for fun.
Well, yeah. Richard, I want you to know that I have a Sasquatch scented candle burning right now so that we can get in the mood.
Nice.
I'm going to send the scent fumes to you over Skype.
We are using Smell Skype.
Yeah, smell. It's a little bit extra, but I feel like it's worth it.
It is so worth it.
Yeah.
Folks, we are here to talk about Night of the Demon from 1980, although IMDb wants us to believe it was 1983.
But I believe the copyright says 1979.
Yes, so it's all over the place, much like this movie's timeline of events.
Well, if you know anything about Bigfoot lore, Bigfoot is time traveling and moving between dimensions through portals, so this makes perfect sense.
Nice.
Begleiten Sie uns auf dem Weg ins Grauen. Westside Film präsentiert Ihnen einen Film, für den Sie starke Nerven brauchen. Der Teufel tanzt weiter.
Class, this is Carla Thomas. She has a special interest in our project. And I think
Professor Newt und fünf Studenten wollen das schreckliche Geheimnis von Sharon Wood lüften. Legende oder grausame Wahrheit? Der Tod kennt keine Gefühle.
Thank you.
Auf der Suche nach dem unheimlichen Mörder stößt Professor Newtsch auf eine Mauer des Schweigens.
There's someone in there.
How do you know?
I saw him.
Are you sure?
Der Teufel tanzt weiter und fordert immer neue Opfer.
This was directed by James C. Wasson, who had a very interesting career.
Yeah, he's well known as the director of Night of the Demon, 1979, 1980, and 1983.
he was joined by writers Jim L. Ball and Mike Williams.
Yes, well known for Night of the Demon, 1979, 1980, yes. And 1983.
I can confirm. it's funny that the most like prolific person in this is the composer, one of the composers, because this had very distinct, you can tell this had two different composers going for it. But the one who actually did something later was Dennis McCarthy, who went on to do freaking Star Trek Next Generation and Star Trek Enterprise and...
Yeah.
The one that I really love is in 2003, he scored a film called Die, Mommy, Die, which is a really fun movie starring a transvestite. And they don't, it's a gentleman playing a woman, also playing her twin sister. And no one ever comments on it. It's not part of the plot. It's one of those just unspoken things. And it's really fun. But yeah. And of course, Jason Priestley, rest in peace. Natasha Lyonne. It's really fun.
So this guy has a very long career, still working as of fairly recently, although not really on significant TV series or movies anymore. But he did a lot of science fiction, but there are a couple I want to highlight here that are not science fiction because I feel like they're very important. For one, he did do the music for 9 episodes of Dawson's Creek. Very cool.
Ooh, nice.
And then he also did the music for the 1997 TV movie Breast Men with David Schwimmer.
I remember when that came out. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I remember it. I was so excited about the movie Breast Men.
he did a movie that I walked out on. He did the score for McHale's Navy and also 1997. And I walked out of that and then went into, not Python, Anaconda. So I was...
Upgrade, for sure.
I think it was actual Upgrade because that movie is memorable, whereas McHale's Navy is something I'm trying to forget.
See, I did not see McHale's Navy at the time. I saw it, well, not recently, but, you know, maybe like 10 years ago on TV. Pretty good. I enjoyed the fact that Tim Curry's the villain, always good. And then you've got like Dean Stockwell and Ernest Borgnine and Bruce Campbell. You've got a nice supporting cast there. That's all I'm saying.
Wow. He also did the score for freaking Parker Lewis Can't Lose. Wow. God, that was 73 episodes. Just 27 shy of syndication. I don't even know if that rule applies anymore. But anyway, that's the guy. So, needless to say, most of the people involved in this film did not go on to do anything else, which is sad because everyone's great.
Yes.
I mean, everyone's in this movie.
They're in this movie and they're great.
You still there?
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Were you cutting out?
God bless America. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I turned my volume down so I couldn't hear you.
Wow, rude.
I just was like, you know what? Solo show, bye.
Jesus.
I'm sorry. He'd scored Cocaine Gangster Talk. Oh, wait, we moved on from that. I have the Gemstone Entertainment VHS tape here. Claims that it's in color. And the tagline is,
an evil mutation embarks on a wave of brutal butchery.
In shock and pain after being found in the forest, with his face mutilated and most of the skin burnt away, Professor Ted Nugent insists that the American legend of the Bigfoot, that's in quotes, monster is true. A group from the university's anthropology class, including the young daughter of the dead fisherman, which dead fisherman, set out to uncover the mystery. The group are eventually trapped by the demon, only to die in the most gruesome bloodbath ever filmed. Rated R. Not suitable for anyone under the age of 18. Explicit scenes of violence. Guaranteed superior quality video. Gemstone Entertainment. See, I didn't forget to read this. Haha. Let's just jump into the plot because
sure.
This movie is every movie. This opens with
every movie. They're all in me.
I'ma be a Bigfoot baby or something.
Well, starting out actually. I think the movie does sort of take a little bit from a movie that had not come out yet, Dark Man, at the beginning, because that is what our main character looks like. Well, I guess he's the main character. Here's a real problem with this movie is that almost every character looks exactly like everybody else.
Yep.
Except for Crazy Wanda, who has her own vibe.
And once in a while, you might pick up what somebody's name is. It's usually after they've disappeared and they're screaming their name to find them. So then you find out what their name is once they're gone. So we're in a hospital and we have the drip, drip, drip of the IV going. And we meet Professor Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent, yep. The game got back and ate his face off, burned it off.
Oh my God. But he speaks very well for having had his face melted off.
When we see what actually happened to him, he should not be alive, much less.
No.
it really does look like Darkman. It's just got like bandages like across his nose, covering up the bottom half of his face. Top half's fine. No problem.
Yeah. When we see what happened to him at the end of the movie, you expect him to be like, that's all the sound you could squeeze out of there, out of his ruined face. It's so crazy. But the doctors that are there and a police inspector, they encourage him to begin the begin.
Begin at the beginning, please. They do warn the sheriff, like, you know, you won't be able to make much sense out of what he has to say, which, you know, having seen the movie, I agree.
You know what this movie needs? A title card. Like, these events that are about to be talked about very confusingly happen, maybe. Like, that would have been great. Or, in America, every year there's 55 sightings of the wildebeest.
There are 55 horrible mutilations by the Bigfoot man.
This is some of those.
Most of them.
So he starts off, the structure of this movie is very important. So I've heard that you're not supposed to do flashbacks in a flashback, and this entire movie is flashbacks within a flashback.
You bet. Well, here's what I think. Almost because they can't actually be flashbacks, because what we're seeing most of the time are the murder scenes of characters that we never even meet outside of these murder scenes, meaning that none of the characters on screen are actually like remembering these events. So it's kind of just like they're imagining these events, or like we're getting, Unsolved Mysteries-esque reenactments of these murders.
Yes.
You know? So I feel like it doesn't totally break the rule.
The first story is about a doomed fishing trip. And a guy is like playing with his rod and reel. And we find out that Bigfoot sure does have dry, itchy eyes.
Need some Visine, Ben Stein.
Oh, man, it looks painful. But yeah, we get Bigfoot vision. Which I love that they're telling the story and we get to see through their storytelling what Bigfoot sees, like they would know. And sure enough, Bigfoot rips off this dude's arm very hilariously. And we just get a splash of blood on a freaking tent. And you think, okay, this is going to be as gory as this gets. Oh, no. Then they focus in on this severed, arm here, on the severed shoulder. And the blood starts spurting out of it, and then it runs into a freaking track, a freaking Bigfoot track, which I love so much.
It's really quite amazing. And it shows you that they do have some ambition here. At first I was like, is this just like some slow watering of the dirt? Like, what are we doing here? But no, they wanted to create a really cool credit sequence, which it is cool. It's got some nice atmospheric music underneath it. The title comes up on screen. We do have to talk about the title, though. Why this particular title, Night of the Demon? Arguably, it's many nights and days of the demon. And
yes.
Also, he's not actually a demon. You know, some real bigoted people just happen to call him that.
And this is a big surprise to me that this doesn't have like 25 different titles. The working title was Revenge of Bigfoot, The Revenge of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Which sounded like I just said The Revenge of the Revenge of Bigfoot, but I didn't. But I should have. But yeah, Night of the Demon, a good question. I don't know what that even means.
Yeah. I mean, most of the attacks happen during the day, so I don't really know.
As Liette and I were watching this, they cut to a college, and this professor and this girl are walking towards the classroom, or a student, and like, I don't even know who these people are. But Liette is like, is this the school from Real Genius?
Is it really?
She just recognized some of the spots, and I'm like, I can't even find where this was filmed in general, much less what is this college that it's being filmed at.
Steven Thrower, help us.
Yeah, these folks, before we started recording, I was telling Jeffrey about how I have this like fake memory that Steven Thrower covered this in Nightmare USA. He did not. So we have no information.
Nope.
If you're coming here for trivia, you're going to be sorely disappointed. Also just sore. So as they're walking across this college campus, this gorgeous music kicks in that I called Baby Aspirin Jazz. It's so fun.
It's extremely 70s. Again, like, remember that this movie came out in 1980, but it is a product of the 1970s.
We get to see... They go to the classroom and they're watching a Bigfoot snuff film.
Oh my god.
Called, instead of Faces of Death, it's Feats of Death.
Picnics of Death. So it's a picnic scene, and we've got like the nice rounded corners, like this is a Super 8 movie that somebody filmed at their picnic. And it's trying to be like the birthday party found footage scene from the movie Signs. But it does not even come close to that. It is the saddest shot of like Bigfoot's back walking into frame as the camera's knocked down, and all of the students in the audience like gasp audibly, and you're like,
oh my god,
this is not actually frightening, buddies.
So the professor he introduces this girl who I thought was supposed to be the daughter of the dude who was fishing and got his arm ripped off, but it's immediately confusing who she is. But he introduces her and she starts telling a story.
I thought it was her.
I this is the thing. I had trouble connecting the two.
I think it is.
Okay. Well, it's definitely a lady.
It's a lady. There is a lady who tells a story. It's a beautiful story about people in love.
Yes. There's a couple out in the woods parked in a van. Excuse me, a rape van because there's no windows on it. And they're making the sex act. When they're rudely interrupted by a monster.
Well, see, Bigfoot hates suckling, which is actually the only thing that's happening here. Just a lot of, you know, feeding.
Yes. This is kind of I don't want to like say there's not more greatness to come, but this moment is so good that they should not have front loaded this here. So,
I think there's some really good stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. The guy gets ripped out like of the van, and he disappears. And you can tell there's something on top of the van, and the girl's screaming and the guy's screaming. But here's the weird part about their screaming. It's like they did a bunch of ADR of their passionate lovemaking, and then said, "Oh, let's just use that for when they're being attacked." Yeah. So you have the guy like, and the woman like, and it's going on and on. And you see the guy hanging over the front windshield, bleeding and sliding down the windshield. And both of them are just moaning like they're in ecstasy.
Yeah. And the woman here dies not of Bigfoot, which is what you might expect, considering mm-hmm, he's a very mm-hmm. violent Bigfoot, as we will continue to see. She instead seems to die of the same condition that fish experience when they've been placed on land. She just gulps a lot of air as we zoom into yeah. her extremely heavy and fake mascaraed lash.
Dude, she dies of fright, and it's so awkwardly done. And it's just, they're just, okay, just keep panting into the camera and then freeze. And then that's it. It's so cool. Yeah. I was dying. And I'm like, this movie just started.
Well, I start, I don't stop dying because in the next scene, we cut to Ted Nugent, Professor Ted Nugent at home, where he walks in on his wife, who I think is only in this one scene.
She has one spot where she shows up later, but okay. This is her big moment.
She's her big moment where she wakes up out of a sleeping stupor to say that he can have some of the finally put away meatloaf, which is just boggling my mind for a couple reasons, because she makes like a big deal of the fact that she finally put the meatloaf away. Which, if he's been gone, he doesn't even know about any meatloaf. But then she says it's still warm, which makes me think that it's not like a meatloaf that's been sitting out for days, which would be bizarre. I don't know. I'm very confused by all this, but I love moments like this where it's clear they were just looking for like something to put into her mouth. What they came up with was the weirdest thing possible.
They talk about she's worried about him getting seduced by a quote unquote student femme fatale. And then he reveals that underneath his professionalism exterior, he's got some nice little mantis on. Now they're tidy whities, but they're black with the little Y front. So they're just Y fronts, but they're so small and so tight. It's uncomfortable to look at. It's like, dude, this is why you guys don't have children. You are constricting your body.
It's 1970s, baby.
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 I was waiting for some more.
That was it.
Okay. So this is like her exit from the movie. But like I said, one little moment later. But now he and his students are taking a boat ride, and they're headed out to something called Old Carlson's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
And on this landing, they find a cabin, and they find good old Mr. Carlson at home, and he's very friendly.
He's very not friendly.
No, he's mean.
Yeah.
Doesn't want anything to do with these guys. He likes to go hunting, but there's all this theorizing about what he's actually doing. Like, he's not going hunting. He doesn't have any food or water. He just goes out there with a gun to go hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so? I mean, he lives in the woods. Yeah, how far does he actually have to go?
Exactly. Fuckers. It is not sound logic.
No. So in order to annoy this guy, they decide to set up camp within like spitting distance of his cabin. And then they immediately start acting sexist towards the female members of their crew by saying, "You said if we let you come with us that you do all the washing and cleaning." And the girls are like, "Bleh."
Mm-hmm. Well, they say like, I like that they're just like, "We lied."
Oh. Good for them. Fuck, make the men do it all. Who cares? It's great. So we cut to a guy sleeping next to a campfire, and it's in the morning. The campfire has gone out, and who is this guy?
No, he's just a guy. He's a camper.
It just literally goes to this scene, because a lot of this setup in this movie is they're always telling stories.
Not this time, baby.
Not this one. Yep. So he gets gotten by Harry and the Henderson in a most spectacular way. He is in his sleeping bag. And you know that scene in Friday the 13th movies where Jason picks the kid up, the girl up, and then slams her into the tree?
Yeah,
with the freaking sleeping bag. And it's even with it when it's uncensored, when you can finally see that uncut footage of it, it is nowhere near as stupid as this. This is so fun.
I mean, he's just like helicoptering him.
Dude, he swings him so long, I think he wasn't going to kill him. Like, he's just having fun. Oh, it's so good. But he swings and swings and swings, and the guy's screaming. We see his face go flying by the camera a few times. Then he flings him onto a big broken tree branch where he's impaled.
Yeah, we got another upside down guy with blood trickling down his face.
Oh, so good.
So this kind of sets up the general structure of the film by this point. Like, we have a sense of where it's going, which is not just like the flashbacks, which we've talked about, but that the majority of this film plays out not unlike a television film. It feels like a very earnest, serious, like light mystery Bigfoot TV film, like a Snow Beast, you know?
Yes.
And then it's just, it cuts every once in a while to these like insane gore murder scenes. And that's just the structure until we get to the end where those two things kind of come together. But otherwise they feel completely separate. And you can even hear like really deliberate like audio cuts on the soundtrack as it moves between these different parts, which again this makes me really curious about the production of this film. Like, you know, were these things initially intended to be part of it? Because they feel like they don't have to be, you know?
This was obviously, they had something they couldn't sell and they said, what's hot right now? Gore, gore, gore. And so they filmed all these freaking gore sequences. There is a little bit of trivia about the an alternate ending of this and an actual restored edition that somebody somewhere is working on. But we'll get to that when we get to that. That night, a guy named Roy, who actually identifies himself as Roy, and I'm like, wow, a character, other than, you know, Ted Nugent, he brings he gets up in the middle of the night, takes a bottle of booze into Mr. Carlson and plies him with alcohol. And then they share a drink and then they share each other's company.
Yep.
They don't get it on.
Carlson admits here that he moved to the woods a while back because he was sick of the rat race in San Francisco, which I'm not buying. I don't believe this is true.
He was never a member of the rat race. He's never seen the rat race.
No.
Oh, boy. But he gets, Roy tells Carlson about his professor. He says, Nugent, old man Nugent, he's cool, but he's just a sucker on the subject of Bigfoot.
They all talk about Nugent like he's a million years old. He's like 5 years older than the rest of them.
If
maybe.
That.
Yeah.
He has a mustache and they mostly don't.
Yep. That's the only difference.
But while he's there, Mr. Carlson, who denies the existence of Bigfoot, full stop, and denies anyone else lives with him, Roy notices some cigar butts in the ashtray. They're very important. Boy, this is going to break this case wide open later, folks.
It's a mystery, like I said.
Oh, brother. If that had been a bottle of J&B, this would have been a Giallo. But he tells them, you want information about Bigfoot, go see Crazy Wanda. Just go to Crazy Wanda's Emporium.
She'll cut you a deal.
Craziness.
My favorite part is when he goes, when Roy goes outside to tell this information to the other kids. He's like, you know, we got to go see, what's her name again? Oh, yeah, Crazy Wanda. Like, you can forget Crazy Wanda.
Maybe he just had a lot to drink. Maybe he's got an alcohol problem. He just blacks out. So these knuckleheads, this gang of students that Nugent students here, they're going to go see Crazy Wanda. And the next morning, this whole montage of them interviewing people begins. I didn't know this was a montage because they start talking to Angry Mustache Man at the general store.
His name is Herb, and we know that because he has these cool custom paper bags that say,
right.
Herb's Herb's Store, Herb's Herbs.
So we're going to be introduced to a lot of the town here, and they're going to tell us all kinds of stories. But this dude in particular, he tells them all about Crazy Wanda, mentions that she's mute, that she doesn't talk anymore. But he does tell them about her love of candy. So they buy some, those little, candy canes of different flavors, like the kind you get at Cracker Barrel. And they're like, oh, we're going to ply her with candy. And folks, it actually works. But we'll get to that. So then they interview some townspeople, and we get stories, all kinds of fun stories. And this is not my word. This is from the movie, quote unquote, mongoloid children.
Yep.
Human sacrifices, inbreeding.
Forest people.
Yes. These things will all come true.
Yep. A self-immolating priest.
Really? That one I missed.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the dad.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Because he leads like the cult, right?
Yeah. Oh, the cult is so great. Meanwhile, I wrote this down because I knew it was going to be important later. The sheriff is snooping, and he's like listening in on these kids' conversations, and he's smoking one of those little thin cigars. Oh. This is an actor who actually had some frickin' credits to his name. This is Paul Kelleher, who has like 50 credits. He's in a bunch of stuff.
Wow.
Also of note, this is the last time we'll see this character.
Do we not see him at the cult scene? I know there's like...
Maybe. I do know that he is in the alternate ending.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It's not really very exciting. Okay. But so don't use to him. Just forget about him. That night, by the way, this movie is structured in two ways. That night and the next morning. It's always that night and the following morning, so get used to that. That night, the gang sits around the fire and tells the tale of Motorcycle Man. He pulls over to smoke a single individual doobie.
Yep.
Then he goes to pee-pee and gets his Peter, Paul, and Mary ripped off by the frickin' the Sasquatch Yeti Bigfoot man.
So I've seen this movie at least three times before watching it twice today for this recording. And this is the first time I actually noticed that we actually see his dick before it is yanked off.
Yes.
That was surprising.
It is quite clear on the Code Red DVD. I think maybe that was what they spent the most time restoring. There's a big, speaking of title cards, before the movie starts in the DVD, they apologize for how bad the movie looks. And it does not look bad. It's just, you know.
Yeah, it's a little dark at times when it's, you know, the Knights of the Demon.
Yeah.
So he gets his dick yanked off by the Sasquatch, who then just kind of leaves him alone because he's like, well, I've done enough here. And so the guy stumbles back to his bike. And as he's stumbling, we see this little bit of dangling skin.
Oh, it's so messed up.
I think it's just like a condom, though. It looks very rubbery, plasticky.
It's weird.
But then he goes and he just like hugs his bike and bleeds over the engine.
Yes.
It's a very tragic end.
Great part of this story is that he dies. He bleeds to death right then and there. So how do we know that the Bigfoot did it? We don't. That's so good. Like, oh, maybe he just tried to have sex with his motorcycle while it was running. I don't know.
Sure, yeah.
People do that. That night, still the same night maybe, I'm not sure, the dudes get out of their tents to go, and the two of them spot a bizarre ritual. This is so weird because I read a Bigfoot novel that was really, really freaking trashy. The Bigfoot wasn't a living Bigfoot. It was like a ghoul Bigfoot that ate corpses. And the people of this small town kept it from killing them by sacrificing a woman to it. And I cannot remember the title of the book.
Okay.
I think Jacob Gustafson sent it to me. So, Jacob, if you're listening, what the hell is that book called? It was very fun. It was very trashy. But, they're watching these people all around with their torches. They have a big effigy of the Yeti that they're going to burn or not. I'm not sure.
Unclear.
And then there's a woman. We'll find out later. This is Wanda laying on the slab. And this naked man is about to mount her.
And he's wearing a Bigfoot mask.
Yes. The dude says, one of the dudes watching says, I can't believe I'm seeing this. And they start firing a gun into the air to break it up.
Yep.
Why? Why were they going to break it up? What's the point?
It was just a bunch of good time Charlies having some fun. And they ruin it.
They act like the woman was going to be raped, but I don't think she was.
No, I don't think so. Unlike later. But I'm watching the scene right now as we talk, and the sheriff is there.
Okay, so sheriff is back.
Yeah, he's like wearing a cool cloak.
Oh, nice.
This is very sacred event that's occurring here.
When they break up this fun, the chaos ensues. Everyone goes running. The Bigfoot statue gets set on fire as planned or not planned. It's fucking great. And then they immediately run back to the freaking gang to tell them what they saw.
And the way they describe it is hilarious because they say it's a huge anthropoid looking effigy. You could just save yourself a couple words and say, yeah, it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah. So they also notice as this fire is started, the one guy goes, hey, this could start a forest fire. And the other guy goes, let them deal with it. They're the ones who are out here. So good. Later, Bigfoot shows up and rips a dude's throat out. I don't know who that was.
Some guy.
And in that moment, the professor's wife at home wakes up, sits up in bed, and it's like, oh, and then we never see her again. Yep.
Bizarre.
It's funny because it's definitely the same setup, like the same exact day they shot the other stuff. So
yeah.
It's cute. I love
she did her entire performance from bed.
Wow. Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah.
The next morning, the goofballs, knuckleheads find out that the boat is gone, along with all of their freaking ammo. There's a lot of mixed emotions about what happened and missing ammo discussion. And there's a Bigfoot track. So they get a plaster cast of this Bigfoot track, which will come up later. And then they continue their quest for Wanda, like you do. Because you can't pass up those deals at Crazy Wanda's.
Nope.
That night, hey, I'm getting used to saying that. That night by the fire, they analyze the plaster cast. And Roy begins talking up a girl over a game of chess, and which is very sexy. And he immediately starts to caress her finger while they're playing this game of chess. And he says
something to the effect of
he says something to the effect of, you can't just jump me like that.
You can't just femme fatale me like that.
She's only a student femme fatale. But yeah, we cut immediately to a different couple actually making the sex act in a sleeping bag. And I'm like, uh-oh, don't do it. But the Bigfoot, he with his Visine bloody eyes comes in and just rakes his claws across. This is Jerry, the guy making love to this girl. Scratches his back, and Jerry sits up like he just had an orgasm. Like, it's so cute.
That's the thing. Bigfoot, he'll make you feel things you've never felt before.
Like, everyone comes running, and they rescue these two from their not immediate danger. And they decide to fix Jerry's back up by pouring what looks like that really light brown sugar. Like, just covering his back in brown sugar. It does not seem like something you'd want to do to an open wound.
No, I think they make a plaster cast of his wounds.
It's all we had. Oh, God. So the next morning, Roy and his pals theorize about the attack and what's going on. And they just start hiking again on their way to good old frickin' Wanda's. And they find it. They find a cabin with some gravestones all around it. And they go to the door, and this very like nicely structured door on this cabin. It has like a little peephole that opens up and everything. And the creepiest pair of eyes is looking out, and they're trying to talk to this crazy Wanda. And they literally ply her with candy. It actually fucking works.
My favorite detail of this first crazy Wanda encounter is that some like circus music is playing in the background. Just to make it clear, she's crazy.
They go inside the cabin, and they find out that Wanda rocks. And I literally don't know what that note meant. Yeah. I just wrote that down. Oh, she's sitting in a rocking chair.
Okay.
That's it. Yes, I remembered my joke.
Rocking it's back and forth.
Fucking dumb. So they show her the plaster cast of the footprint, and that is not the wise thing to do. She's clearly traumatized by something that happened to her involving Bigfoot. She slaps it and it goes flying across the room and shatters on the ground.
See, I think what they were doing is it was like a Cinderella type situation. They were bringing around their plaster cast to see if anybody's foot would fit. And she was really upset that hers did not.
She's the cinder fella. As she's going completely crazy and screaming and hollering, that's when they're like, there's nothing wrong with her voice, because she was supposed to be mute. And I'm like, well, she still hasn't said words. And one of the girls says, she needs help, that poor woman.
See, I think all this really reveals is that she was just totally uninterested in talking to anybody in town.
Yeah.
So they thought she was mute, but really, she was just disinterested.
Have you met the townspeople? Exactly.
I have. I've met all of them.
You are a man about town. So that night, there it is again, that night, this movie takes place over 300 days approximately.
Of the demon. Yeah.
Of the demon. They tell the tale of the woodsman and how the mean old Bigfoot stole his axe and killed him with his own axe by just stabbing him in the shoulder. But this dude's death scene, he's milking it so hard. It's so funny.
This one felt like a real tossed off one. Like, most of the other death scenes are like huge set pieces. They clearly spent time with them. This one's just like, yeah, you got a shoulder wound. Yeah, pretend like it really hurts.
Zoom in on it and just hold on the blood pumping out of it.
And we're going to say that Bigfoot then picked up the axe and then brained you, but we're not actually going to show that because that would cost too much.
We don't have the glove, the Bigfoot hairy glove, so we'll do it this way. So then they immediately launch into another story. This is the best thing in the movie after that other thing I said is my favorite thing, where this tale is of two Girl Scouts who are scouting out a place for Girl Scout activities, I guess. And as they're walking, I immediately thought, because they're both wearing Girl Scouts of America t-shirts, I said, did the GSOA approve the use of their logo for this?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely, they did. We wouldn't be able to see it. We wouldn't be able to see it if they hadn't, Jeffrey.
I'm just thinking it's like a you don't know, it doesn't hurt anybody situation.
Right. Nobody knows anything about this movie anyway.
The two girls are credited as Girl Scout Junior, Girl Scout Senior in the credits, which is nice.
Oh, that's so cute. So Bigfoot starts chasing them, and they're running for their lives, but they don't get very far because the Bigfoot catches them, and both of these girls were prepared, so they whip out their knives. Unfortunately, each one of them is either right or left-handed because the Bigfoot grabs their hands that hold the knives and then, like, forces them to start stabbing each other. He causes them to have a knife fight.
Hey, quit stabbing yourselves. Quit stabbing yourselves. It's like a Three Stooges bit. Where two little girls are being murdered by each other with a Bigfoot in between them. It is cinematic poetry.
It is great. It goes on forever, too. It's just like, it's so funny. And then they die, and Bigfoot's gone, right? So how do we know that these two girls didn't just go insane and stab each other to death? Like, how do we even know that the Bigfoot is a part of this? It's so fun.
Well, because there's lots of Bigfoot tracks.
I'll take that. I will accept that. So we cut back to the idiots, knucklehead, goofball people, whatever, students. And one of them says, the Bigfoot's not playing games anymore.
I mean, arguably he was never playing games. Like from the word go, he was serious. Yeah, playing for keeps.
Yeah, dude, he's playing for the big dollars. They divide up the shifts of who's going to stand guard, and discuss the old ammunition that they found in Wanda's place, in Wanda's shack. And I also wrote in my notes, why did I write that down?
I don't know.
It's not important. Just wanted you to know that I was paying attention to those two useless details.
Yeah, I've got about five more notes. I know we're only halfway through the movie, but I don't got much left.
I got a whole another page and a half. Anyway, let's keep moving. Pete, whoever Pete is, he gets gotten by Bigfoot. He has a shotgun, with the very precious ammunition. But Bigfoot grabs him and slams him into the tree, and it's so dark we can't really see what happens, but I presume that Pete blew his own brains out with the shotgun.
Bummer.
Because later we see his brains splattered all over the tree, which is actually really disturbing to me. The next morning, the blonde girl, having not seen Pete's body, but you know she did see his brains, she's grieving over him. And now that they've decided that this shit's really serious and that the Bigfoot is not playing games anymore, they're going to hypnotize Wanda, which I love me some hypnotism here. But Wanda does not want to relax. She does not like the word relax. She also really doesn't want them to go into the locked room in the cabin. There's a cabin door. There's a door in the cabin that has a padlock on it. They touch that padlock and oh shit, she goes wild. What is in this room?
Something.
They say it stinks, so if you think it's a corpse, but there's no corpse. And she's got an altar with Mary. Mm. And
a lot of religious stuff.
Yeah, and there's nothing. It's so great. But because they've managed to completely traumatize her, they successfully hypnotize her now.
Success.
Woo-hoo! They're like, remember when you were 15 years old? And she's like, yeah, dude, those were Wanda, the pigtail years.
Oh, I think she's more like, yeah, I'm 16. Of course I remember 15.
Yeah, this actress, I kind of wish she'd been in more stuff because she goes for it, man. Has a lot to do in this movie.
Oh, for sure.
It's not just a thousand-yard stare and screaming. We get to see her. She has a young love. She's in love with this boy. And then all of a sudden, her father is screaming at her in her face. He says, and I quote, "I'm saving your soul, you ungrateful bitch. I'm saving you from burning in hell, just like your wretched mother."
So who corrupted the mother? I guess he did.
Maybe.
Well, his plan doesn't really work because, yeah, maybe he gets rid of the boyfriend. But guess what? She's going to get a new boyfriend and he's much bigger and hairier and meaner.
No. Yeah. After this beration, he berates her and everything. Then we see this painting of the Virgin Mary. And Virgin Mary, she just says, "I don't want to get involved. No thanks. I stay out of family stuff." And that night, Wanda goes to pee in the woods, and the Bigfoot shows up and just rapes her. It is really disturbing if this had been made by competent people. Like, I do not like rape scenes. They are very disturbing to me. This one is not, because it's so poorly staged and so, like, they can't depict how horrific the event is. So I'm just like, ah, yes, of course, rape scene.
Also, it's incredibly dark on the DVD print that we have. It's got some spliced in drawn lightning footage.
Yes, very nice.
Yeah, to set the mood, you know.
And while she's being raped, her father comes out and is watching. He's got a shotgun in hand. It's presumably loaded. And he just stands there, like kind of lamenting that this is happening, but not trying to actively stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Not good, Dad. Not good.
Not good. And then rather recognizing this creature for what it clearly is, a Sasquatch, he says, yes. Well, as a demon,
yeah.
You're now polluted with the devil's spawn.
Yes. So now she's pregnant with the Sasquatchian child. And
I refer to him as a baby Biggie.
Boss Baby 2.
Boss Baby 2, baby Biggie.
He's trying to induce miscarriage by giving her like what is either...
It's like poison.
Some herbs like poison or that Ecto Cooler. High C punch. I'm not sure what
that's why they don't sell Ecto Cooler anymore. Yeah.
Yes. My favorite scene in this little montage of their life together while she's pregnant is the most baffling moment. I asked Lietta what it meant and she told me exactly what had just happened. And I said, no, what does it mean? So there's a shot where Wanda walks up to the front of the cabin. Her dad's standing there watching her. And she's carrying this huge log from the woods. And then she freaking like tries to open the door with her shoulder, but it's clearly closed and opens outward, maybe. So she's just banging into it, and she kind of looks at her dad and then looks away and then looks sad and just stands there.
Is this, you know, for Simon, is this Log Lady Origins?
That log has a story to tell, boy. He knows who kissed Laura Palmer. It is such a weird shot. I don't know what they're trying to show or what they're trying to do, but it's great.
Want my Coke? It's okay. You can have it.
No.
Really, you can have it.
Okay. A Coke Thanks. And a smile
makes me feel good. One, two, three, go.
Wanda has a baby.
Okay. Frickin' Virgin Mary, that painting of Virgin Mary,
yeah,
is watching this whole thing, and she's like, no comment. She's just coldly watching all this. Then we have the birth.
Hold on.
Uh-oh.
Do you think maybe it's trying to imply that Jesus was not a virgin birth? Jesus was a Bigfoot birth.
That explains the crucifixion and the resurrection.
Because Bigfoot never die.
That's right. So she has this kid. They hold up the baby, a little monkey covered in barbecue sauce. And
looking good.
I wrote in my notes that this birth sequence is less disturbing than Nightmare. We actually almost turned the movie off. We've been watching The Holiday like every year for Christmas since it came out. And this was the first year where the napkin head came up and we almost shut the movie off. Like, oh my God.
It's charming.
It's not funny. The little girl hypes it. She's like, Oh, Cameron Diaz, this is the funniest
Wait
thing ever.
Wait, you see this shit. You're
this
gonna
is so
love
funny.
It.
You're not going to believe it. And it's like, Cameron Diaz is like, is this the death of my career right here?
Mr. Napkinhead in The Holiday looks like Cillian Murphy as the Scarecrow.
Oh, shit. So love then the gang of goofball, idiot, moron, knucklehead people, they immediately start debating the validity of Wanda's story. They're like, maybe that's just how she remembers it. She's crazy. And you're like, no,
maybe that's just like
up.
Maybe that's just like her opinion, man.
It's fucking idiots. Oh my God.
Well, luckily they do have evidence that they can go discover.
Oh no.
They go dig up the baby.
Little baby coffin. Biggie.
Yeah. When they actually dig this up and then open it up,
yep.
It is not what we saw previously, which looked more or less like a baby. It is now, I think, just a cow skull.
Okay. This is so broken here. But they're not like, oh, so the story wasn't true.
Right.
They look at it and they're like, whoa.
Damn, that's messed up.
And the one girl, before they even get to the frickin' the little baby coffin, she's like, I think I'm gonna sick. I mean, so awesome. So
if only
weird.
They just had like a Spirit Halloween store, they would have been able to go out and find like some malformed baby skeleton. But now they don't have that, so they're just like, Cow Skull's gonna have to sell it.
Sure. But they do accept this as proof of her story. And before they can freaking go back to the cabin, Bigfoot attacks, and they have to retreat to the cabin. Like, they have to haul ass to save their lives. And they start to barricade themselves in. The idiot fires literally the only shotgun shell they have left. He's trying to shoot the Bigfoot, and his girlfriend grabs him and like pulls him away. So he fires at nothing. But they're not like, oh, so the story wasn't true.
Right.
They look at it and they're like, whoa.
Damn, that's messed up.
And the one girl, before they even get to the frickin' the little baby coffin, she's like, I think I'm going to be sick. So awesome. So
if only
weird.
They just had like a Spirit Halloween store, they would have been able to go out and find like some malformed baby skeleton. But now they don't have that, so they're just like, Cow Skull's gonna have to sell it.
Sure. But they do accept this as proof of her story, And before they can freaking go back to the cabin, Bigfoot attacks. Mm-hmm. And they have to retreat to the cabin. Like, they have to haul ass to save their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to barricade themselves in. The idiot fires literally the only shotgun shell they have left. He's trying to shoot the Bigfoot, and his girlfriend grabs him and like pulls him away, so he fires at nothing. It's so ridiculous. Oh, yeah. So Bigfoot has been bringing offerings to Wanda.
Like presents.
Yes, presents, like Coke bottles and trash and little shiny objects and stuff. So they start grabbing this pile of stuff, start flinging it like an unwanted Christmas gift back at the poor freaking Bigfoot.
He's like, what the hell, Wanda? I thought you liked this stuff. The Coke bottle in particular really kills me, because there's like a running theme in bad movies about Sasquatch loving Coke. For instance, have you seen the film Cry Wilderness?
No.
So it's not a horror film, although it's directed by the director of Night Train to Terror, Doom Show classic Night Train to Terror.
Oh, wow.
It's a children's family film about this kid who like hangs out with a Bigfoot who's like, you know, Cyrano-ing at his window. Yeah, basically he just brings this Sasquatch lots of Coke cans. And then here, Sasquatch is bringing Wanda Coke cans. So Coke is like the language between the species. It's like how we connect, you know.
I'd like to teach Bigfoot to drink a Coke in perfect harmony.
Exactly.
So Wanda has been mute up until this point, just rocking back and forth. She finally admits that she killed her father.
Yeah.
And it's pretty gnarly. She freaking burned him while he was in the outhouse, I think, or in a shed. And He's begging her not to do this and begging her. Then the door opens a little, or like one of the planks falls away, and his mangled, melting hand is like swinging at the camera. It's badass. Yeah,
it looks very cool.
He's a bad man. Bye-bye. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bigfoot does one nice thing here, is he returns the body of their dead friend to them. It's Pete. He like just basically throws his corpse at them. And then everything goes into slow motion. This Bigfoot attack sequence is the tour de force of this movie, boy. This gore that happens is so nuts. He disembowels one dude and rips his guts out and then starts swinging his guts around as a weapon. It doesn't make any sense, but damn it, he does it. He kills a girl. I mean, he just starts killing all these people.
Just one after another. And it's all slow-mo. There's like a choking and throttling of that woman with the fisherman dad. There's one of the guys gets rubbed up against a broken window frame, slashing his neck. One of the girls gets impaled by something or other. It's a lot.
Oh, that was a pitchfork.
A pitchfork inside the house, sure.
Wow. But then one thing I really love is, when, like we talked about, we hinted at, is when he grabs the professor, Ted Nugent, and freaking shoves his face into the oven and the little stove there, and just completely destroys his face.
He's just a blackened and charred mess with like perfectly white vampire teeth for some reason. Like, again, they couldn't find realistic looking teeth. They found vampire teeth.
Oh, so good.
It's beautiful. But yeah, he's a mess. He's so fucked up. He should not look as good as he does later as Darkman.
We come back. We flash back to the present back of the flashing forward, where the professor's, you know, in the bed at the hospital telling his story. And while he's like insisting that all this is true, they immediately dope him up and he goes to sleep because they have declared him criminally insane. They haven't found the bodies of any of these people. They just have him.
Yeah.
Yet he's criminally insane because they can't find the other people.
Well, it's just like how you can't find Bigfoot, so Bigfoot is guilty.
Oh, see, that's how it should have been.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, he's not doing much to make his own case for himself. You know, no. His only evidence is he says, find crazy Wanda. She'll tell you.
Do you have candy? Will she talk?
I'm just saying you can't really rely on a woman named Crazy Wanda as your expert witness. I think, you know, there's some credibility issues.
And that's the end of the movie.
Yep, that's it.
A little bit of trivia I have. This was a video nasty.
Yes.
Because of its gore, it was actually on the prosecuted list, so it was censored. Well, first it was banned, and then later it was eventually cut and released in England in 1994. So this was a big, sought-after title. It's really funny to me that this was... Because even though it's really gory, it's so innocuous.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the most disturbing thing would be the rape. The rape scene is the most screwed up thing in the movie.
Sure.
But like I was saying, it's just sad.
Yeah.
But this was released on VHS by VCII, along with such things as The Prowler and Mardi Gras Massacre, Boogeyman 2, and something with Aldo Ray called Haunted.
Yeah,
but the last... wee bits of trivia here is that, according to IMDb, there's a 2020 remastered version being worked on. Okay. And there is a alternate ending which features a helicopter rescue, which sounds crazy to me how they afforded a helicopter. But two students survive, and they're the ones telling the story. The rescue is headed by the sheriff. And then there's a scene between Crazy Wanda and the sheriff. And then he, who's in on that cult, assures Wanda that the Bigfoot is alive and well, that the kids did not kill the Bigfoot, which we obviously know that.
Yeah, we saw. And yeah. Crazy Wanda would know that too.
But the distributors thought that the film would do better if the kids all died and just the one dude who actually died, the... Dr. Professor Ted Nugent, have him just be the only survivor.
Yeah, I think they made the right choice.
Absolutely. I still would like to see this ending, and I would like to see this movie. I don't know if I could get through it, but I like to see this movie without the gore scenes that were obviously added later. Like, was it just not long enough?
It's fairly long as is. It's 95 minutes. Yeah.
But yeah, so somewhere out there, there's an alternate ending of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the gore, yeah, that's weird. Because, the ending is very gory. Mm-hmm. So that made me think that maybe reshoots weren't something that happened. But now, knowing that, it's like, well, maybe it always was. Like the ending that we get is a reshoot, too, where these two strands of the movie kind of come together through the violence. Interesting. There's a story here. It might not be a very interesting story, but there's a story.
I would love to hear from the director, the writer, any of the cast, any of the people that worked on it. It'd be really fun to find out what the hell happened.
Yeah.
Now that we've discussed this fine feature film of the hairy variety with the big feet, Jeffrey, how do you like this one?
Well, there is a line of dialogue that comes right prior to the ending Sasquatch mayhem that I think sums up my feelings. It's when the guy who they put brown sugar on his back.
Yeah.
One of the women is looking at his wounds and saying, ugh.
Really knowing anything about it beyond, yeah, I saw it. Yeah. And I knew it was banned. Which I thought was ridiculous. I still think that being banned is fucking dumb. But I picked this DVD up because you and I were going to talk about it. And I am so glad I did, because this is one I just want to... As soon as this stupid freaking pandemic is finally over...
Switches between this, again, TV movie mystery, which is pretty sedate and sleepy and not a lot happens. And then, you know, about every 5-10 minutes, you get the out and out ridiculous violent scenes of gore, dick ripping, Girl Scout stabbing, sleeping bag twirling, all of this ridiculous stuff. It makes for a jarring viewing experience, and one that is both sleepy and exciting at once, which is good. That's how every movie should be, I think. Very unique. I can't think of any movie that feels quite like it. And, you know, certainly not a classic in any sense, except in perhaps in our world. So, yeah, I like it a lot. I like that it's a one-off from, like, everyone involved. That kind of makes it more special, too. It's like they gave it everything, and it wasn't enough. How do you like this one?
Oh, yeah, me too. I love this. This was my first viewing in a decade, I think. I remember going on a downloading spree, not that I would ever do that, before you could get this on DVD, and I picked up a nice little AVI of this, of VHS. It was even darker than this DVD. And I remember not thinking that much of it. I remember laughing at the dick-ripping scene, of course, but not really knowing anything about it beyond, yeah, I saw it, yeah. And I knew it was banned, which I thought was ridiculous. I still think that being banned is fucking dumb. But I picked this DVD up because you and I were going to talk about it. And I am so glad I did, because this is one I just want to, as soon as this stupid frickin' pandemic is finally over, I want to watch this with people, because, man, it is a fun frickin' movie. The gore, of course, is awesome. It keeps you from getting too bored, although now I just want to watch the characters interact. The music is great. The flashback in a flashback, or the quote-unquote stories that they keep telling, are so weird. The movie is so hard to follow when you're trying to take notes on it. It's great. It's just confusing. And like I said, it's sleazy but awkwardly staged, so it's not like you feel disgusting watching it. And yeah, I just, oh man, this lives up to the hype. Like, there's a lot of movies out there that folks kind of like treasure, and this is one of those movies that people really love and really freaking talk about in glowing, loving terms. So I was a little worried that this wasn't going to be all that great, but man, it is really freaking great.
The other thing I would mention is that I'm a student and a fan of Bigfoot Sasquatch movies from this time.
Yeah.
And most of them, I love them, but they are dull. They don't give you a lot of Bigfoot action. They don't give you a lot of Bigfoot mayhem. You know, like, again, think of something like Snow Beast, where the most you get really is like Bigfoot staring in through a window and scaring some people. This one goes obviously in a much, yeah, much sleazier, much more madcap direction, that I think a lot of like trashy Bigfoot films of like the last 20 years have done. But up until this point, when this was made in, you know, the late 70s, there hadn't really been other Bigfoot movies that went this route. So it's nice to see. You know, this ain't your daddy's, your grandpappy's Boggy Creek, man.
No, that's what I was thinking of. Thinking of Legend of Boggy Creek, and I was thinking of, was it Creature from Black Lake?
Yep. Yeah, that's another sort of slow one. I mean, the thing is, yeah, those largely keep Bigfoot off screen. They're kind of, you know, I think hesitant to put him on full display. this one's just like, nope, here's Bigfoot. Here he is. He's fucking people up.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about what he looks like, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean,
we get to, like, not only is he like on the camera, but he has like this little, his mouth is moving, and he's kind of like a ginger. He's a little ginger Bigfoot.
Very cute. Is a little gingery, yeah. Yeah, he's cute. He's not super very scary looking.
No, like a Neanderthal man, but taller.
Yeah, yeah, he's very apish. He's a missing link.
10 out of 10 would hit that.
You and Crazy Wanda, you can share.
Theirs was a love I dared not defy.
Defile?
Well, folks, thank you for hanging out and listening to us talk about this freaking bonkers-ass movie. And Jeffrey, thank you for being here.
You're so welcome.
Ah, man. I guess we'll go back to the freaking cabin. There's a locked room in there. I don't know what's in it.
There's DVD copies of Shriek of the Mutilated and The Legend of Bigfoot. And,
oh, man. Boggy Creek 2.
Yeah, lots of VHS copies of that.
Meet you there. I'll bring some brown sugar for our wounds.
I'll bring my feet.
Bye, folks.
Hello, This Is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This Is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This Is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.
If you enjoyed this show, then make sure you check out the other great shows on the Legion Podcast Network, like Cinema Psyops, Cinema Beef, Devour the Podcast, Duncan and Bo Come Correct, Exploding Heads Horror Movie Podcast, Friday the 13th, Get Slayed, The Helming Power Hour, Hello, This Is the Doom Show, Hero Hero Ghost Show, Kill the Cast, Underwater Kaiju from Outer Space, Jerry Hates Action, Legion After Dark, Mental Health, Obsessive Cinema, Discourse, Pick Six Movies, The Podcast by the Cemetery, The Podcast on Haunted Hill, The Psychosemantic Podcast, Rick Radio, House of Wax, Dude Looks Like the 80s, Rabbit and Red Radio, The Shadecast, Short Bus Cinema, Two Drink Minimum Commentaries, The VD Clinic, Who Will Survive Horror Podcast, and Witch vs. the Doomsday Clock. With such a wide spread of shows, there is guaranteed to be a niche for you to fall in love with. Horror, politics, movies, books, sex, music, commentaries, health, video games, kaiju, action, news, comedy, and opinions that would most likely get you killed in some parts of the world. We are proud to bring you some of the best podcasting in the world. Check us out at www.legionpodcast.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, and any other dark corner of the internet where podcasts can be found.